I have a question about Giant Rat of Sumatra. I heard that that was originally written for Ellison's Dangerous Visions.
He wanted a piece from us, and we offered him the script. This is of the original radio version, not the one that is the album, which is only fleetingly like that.
You're talking about By the Light of the Silvery?
Yes, yes. By the Light of the Silvery, it was called then. Well, I mean, it was always known as the Giant Rat of Sumatra at the time, but the real title was By the Light of the Silvery. It was a story about the disappearance of the moon, and Hemlock Stones and Dr. Flotsam are called to Scotland to find the moon, which seems to be behind somebody's house back in the garden.
You want to be smart? Don't read the Bible. Don't read the One Minute Manager. Don't read How to Influence Friends and Make People Kiss Your Ass. What you read is you read the Arthur Conan Doyle Sherlock Holmes stories. You read the entire canon. They're not that many. You read the entire canon, and you will be smarter than you ever need to be, because every one of them is based on the idea of deductive logic. Keep your eyes open and be alert. That's what all good writing says. Wake up and pay attention. Pay attention. Pay attention.
Theater presents The Case of the Giant Rat of Sumatra, or
By the Light of the Silvery.
I remember well that foggy winter night in August 1894.
49.
95.
Hype! Spike! Give me my shot, Doctor!
The great detective, Sure Shot Homeless, was relaxing with his feet up on the ottoman.
Get your feet off me, or I'll have the whole Turkish army after you, mashallah!
Sorry, old man. Sure Shot Homeless was contemplating the harrowing experiences he had just undergone in facing single-handedly, with one hand only, the giant rat of Sumatra, the most treacherous, devastating, despicable, incongruous, and intrinsically boring case we'd ever undertaken. Homeless lad, how do you spell bummer?
R-A-T. Oh, Gad, Beeson, how I wish I were interrupted in the midst of these interminable memoirs by a furtive knocking on the door, bringing us once again an unfathomable and unpardonably perplexing case of deception, treachery, and Victorian intrigue. Then I can take another shot.
How do you spell that?
Aha! My pleas have been answered. I deduce by that knock that on the other side of the door stands a short black man with a great beak of a nose, wearing tails and a feathered boa. Beeson, open the door and prove me correct.
I have been asked to talk today about, since it's the 24th of August in the year 2013, the Civil Rights March from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, in pursuit of equal rights for blacks in the state of Alabama. And I was in that march. I had come all the way from Los Angeles to march with hundreds of thousands of others. I'm no great hero, but I was impelled by a great urge and need. You can't write what I've been writing for 50 years and not have to walk the walk as well as talk the talk. And so I flew to Selma. We got to Selma, and we were hurt. I've written an article about this. It's called From Alabama with Hate. It's in a number of my books. It's in the Essential Ellison. By the way, if you're interested in my books, you can go to harlanellisonbooks.com. Don't buy from Amazon, unless you have to. Buy from me. Put the money in my pocket. I'm a poor black child from Dubai, and I need the money so I don't have to keep selling my body on the street.
At my age, you know, I'm not making a good buck anymore. My old lady's got walking pneumonia at the moment, but don't worry about that. She'll be okay in a day or so.
Nevermore.
Oh. It's a raven, Homeless.
Don't be fooled. It's that damned Moriarty in one of his devilishly clever disguises. That black-hearted kangaroo will do anything for exposure. Never Moriarty.
Slam.
Well, I think I deserve a shot for that.
For better or worse, whatever it is I know, I want them to know. Let them accept or reject, but at least give me a shot, for God's sakes. Let me have my chance. When I go past Brentano's window, you know, all I see is Irving Wallace and Jacqueline Suzanne and a whole horde of people who are writing books that are not what they should be. And Nabokov is not there, usually, and Borges is not there, usually, and a writer like Kate Wilhelm, who's a brilliant writer. She's one of the best writers in the country today. You'll never see her books in the window of Brentano's because it's a little more difficult than the new Irving Wallace. And I think it's good for people to struggle with what they're reading. I think it's good for them to work a little harder at it. I think things come too easily. I think we sit and watch programs like this where ideas are boiled down so that a mongoloid could understand. Now we'll get letters from people who have children who are, you know, mongoloids saying you're a beast. I think that simplifying ideas too much distorts them, and I think that's what television does.
Well, I'm not going to sit here and say that this is any great forum for wisdom, but I'm glad you're here tonight.
Oh well.
And we will continue after these announcements. Please stay tuned.
Now you're upset.
No, I'm not upset. I feel great
upset.
About it. I'm not upset, but I just don't know why every single what's the word I'm looking for? Every single blank has to be a confrontation.
Because that's what life is. It is a confrontation. That is what life is composed of, an endless series of confrontations with the society in which one lives, with one's fellow man and woman, and with oneself. That is what life is all about. That's why you can never get rid of violence on television, because life is, in to greater or lesser degree, violent. And the intensity of the confrontation, the revelations of the human condition that come out of those confrontations, is what makes enlightening drama, makes art for us. We must learn from what we read. We can't keep getting our brains massaged. We have to have the confrontation so that when they come to us in real life, we have some some well of information to go to.
Oh, no, Beeson, you dum-dum. Catch up my arm and get the cocaine. Oh, I'm so terribly bored. How I wish how that knock would come to deliver us. That's it, Dotsum. It's an 87-year-old man wearing tweed underwear and calico gym socks. In possession of a rare paper, a phony medical certificate from the Wallapai School of Mines.
Hello!
Ah, it's you, Beeson. Well, I appreciate the gesture, old man, but come in out of that mist and give me a shot. Ah, you missed again, you old geezer.
Oh, Homeless, things have come to a pretty pass. Back to the memoirs.
Oh, no. If that giant rat walks into my memoirs again, I'll die of boredom.
Wait a minute, Homeless. Wait a minute. Look at there. A carriage is just drawing up in front of our room.
Yes.
Two people are getting out.
Remember, before Cal Worthington, there was...
What's his name? Ralph
Williams.
Williams. Hi, folks. Ralph Williams here.
Ralph, amazing story about Ralph
I bought
Ralph
a car
Williams.
From Ralph Williams one time.
Do you want to know what happened?
I bought two cars from Ralph Williams.
Let me tell the story already, for God's sake.
They were great cars. I've since sold them. But
he bought the joint from Leon Ames, who
right.
was an old actor. And it
right.
was Leon Ames Ford. And Leon Ames was the old-time actor who had the car lot.
Right.
And he married Leon Ames' daughter, and he became the manager of the place. And he was a dynamite manager. He sold like crazy. One day, as I understand it from an ex-LA cop, Leon Ames got kidnapped.
I covered that story for KTLA in Los Angeles.
By two or three huge thugs, and he calls up Ralph Williams at the lot, and Ralph says, "Oh, Leon, what's the matter? I'm selling a 32 Chevy wagon to a couple from Inyo. What do you want?" He said, "Forget the wagon. You know, I'm kidnapped. I'm in a motel, and they want $150,000. Bring it in a satchel. Well, can I sell the car? Forget the car, Ralph." Over here immediately, right? So yeah, all right. Now you got to know, Ralph Williams is, first of all, 8.5 feet tall, looks like a slab of paper. Charlton Heston looked like a teeny weenie. So he goes and he gets his $150,000 in cash and he puts it in a satchel and he goes out to this Fakakta motel way out in Japip, you know. And one of these dudes opens the door with a, you know, magnum in his hand and aims it at him. And Ralph Wiggs kind of looks around, smashes the door into the guy, breaks his brain, hits the other guy with a satchel, knocks him across the room, breaks every bone in his body, turns around and says, "You okay, Leon?" "Yeah, I'm okay. Come on, Leon." Takes him back to the lot
and sells the 32 on that right on.
I could not believe my eyes.
Why did you write it? It's a great story.
It's
it ought to be told.
Well, it's a little late now. He's not the you know, he was on the Carson show and everything. He was the man. Now it's Cal Worthington with that funny hat.
Give me immortality or give me death. That's the motto here at Ralph's Ball Sports, new and used body shop in the city of the future. Hi, friends, Ralph's Ball Sports here to tell you that everybody must die, but you don't have to be there when it happens. That's why we're having a great going out of body sale. Yes, you can live forever while your friends fall apart around you like rotten fruit, and here's how. Lease an organ or limb from our headless body farm. It's made in America from Americans. Enter the new century with these exclusive clone-ons. Nap velour designer jeans. Deluxe follicle hair mat grafting with upgraded media-sensitive stimulated wrapper filler. Rear roll, non-glossy carbon intensified glutal guards, power moons, and tinted tint grill spoilers in slash dash or faux flannel. So come on down to Ralph's Ball Sports, City of the Future, and do it today because there may not be a tomorrow.
One is a masked lady dressed in wood, carrying a flathead Indian with little or no regard for her personal safety. She's approaching the door.
Thank goodness.
Wait. Now they're turning round and going back to the carriage. It's pulling it. Come back. Come back. We need you, whoever you are. Oh, homeless, it's worked. They've stopped.
Oh.
They're getting out and walking up the steps.
Yes, it's beginning a plot at last. I deduce by that knock that it's a masked lady dressed in wood, carrying a flathead Indian with little or no regard for her own personal safety.
Well done.
Ah, come in, madam. But you better leave your Indian outside. I'm afraid Beeson is not entirely sympathetic with the cause of the red man.
Oh, let me take your mask, madam.
Thank you.
And your shoes.
Thank you.
And your dress.
Thank you. Why, without your clothes, you're naked. Thank you. But tell me, why are you still wearing the uniform of a drum majorette in the Irish Republican Army?
I have no time to explain. I have some startling and vitally important information of a top-secret nature, which I can divulge to no one. Goodbye.
What? A slam.
Oh. Look here, homeless. He's left his Indian.
Wouldn't you?
Perhaps you don't think. It's a bomb.
Good thinking. Quick, submerge him in this barrel of port.
It's not a bomb.
Quite right. It's a drunken red man.
I'm not a red man.
You are now. You're covered with port.
You tawny devil.
Get a picture of him quickly before he dries off, Beeson.
All right. Say cheese.
Hey, get your hand away from your forehead, Indian.
I was just giving you the port salute.
I didn't give you the port authority to do it.
Look, homeless. His disguise is washed off.
Aha! It's you.
Aha!
It's me.
How did you know?
Who's he?
It's him. How do you know?
I wrote a monograph on it once. Called It's Him. Where is it?
It's in the hymn book under miscellanea.
Oh, give me a shot, doctor. Ah, oh, that's not a shot, you lackwit. That's a bomb.
So's this script.
Quick! Submerge it in the port. Good. Now it's a portfolio. Fish it out, Indian.
There's a girl in here.
We have a girl in every portfolio.
What page is she on?
What page are you on?
Page 7.
What does it say?
It says here on page 7 that giant rat of Sumatra came at him bearing his leather fangs.
That's a Spike Milligan joke. He's right. It's patented.
All right, then. The giant rat of Sumatra came at him bearing its patented leather fangs.
Look, doctor. The Indian has died of boredom.
Well, there goes another plot. Roll out the barrel.
Hard to port.
Sure is hard.
Batson, get the door.
I've got it.
Well, open it. Open it up, you yo-yo.
It's a jar.
But look, it's a Syrian ambassador.
Good God, it's a Syrian ambassador in a jar.
Well, let him out, man. Oh, my goodness gracious me. Oh, only you could have done it, homeless. I've been in that jam ever since Portland.
Oh, here, lie down. Oh,
oh,
oh, oh, listen to this. Here, Lie down between these two pieces of bread and we'll dry you off.
Oh, they're so much better. Thank you very much. My throat's sticky, though. Have you anything to drink?
Yeah, predictably enough, have some port.
It's very, very good. What is it?
Indian port.
Indian port?
Yes, it's been creored in Indians.
Any port in a jam.
Page 9!
We've made it!
Now, Mr. Ambassador, what's this you said about someone stealing the moon?
But I haven't said that yet.
Well, say it.
Gentlemen, someone has stolen the moon.
What did you say?
You may scoff.
Thank you.
But 3 years ago, the Assyrian government, or a Syrian government, was given $8 billion by the United States to burn wheat and flood Damascus, thereby creating the largest international sponge ranch west of Beirut. With the remaining $8 billion, we decided to enter the space race.
I see.
Yes. We gathered together the finest scientists in the country and through a German interpreter ascertained how to build a mighty rocket. Our first shot landed successfully on London. After paying off the insurance, we had just enough money left to send our scientists to the moon. But then, a strange thing happened. We missed.
There's nothing strange about that.
We didn't think so either. We've missed before, and we'll miss again. Then we discovered that we hadn't missed the moon. The moon had missed us.
That's absurd. No, it's insane.
No, it's a super plot.
Oh, it'll look great in your memoirs, Homeless.
Get on with it, Ambassador.
The last message we received from our scientist was that the moon was definitely not there. Mr. Homeless, will you take the case?
What a challenge. Of course I'll take the case.
Well, then here it is.
Why, this is a case of smallpox. Couldn't you get anything bigger?
I'm sorry, that's all I had.
But it'll be fine for a pox lunch. Put it in the freezer next to the mumps. Doctor, we're off!
Gentlemen, the 23rd annual emergency meeting of the Royal Armenian Academy of Arts and Sciences will please come to order. Mr. Homeless, I believe you have a report.
Oh, stop that, Dr. Bish. Thank you. Hold him down. Gentlemen, the moon has disappeared.
Rubbish!
Nonsense!
Dogmatic twaddle!
No, true! Dr. Alewife of the Royal Lithuanian Yacht Club at Staines-on-Seat, have you noticed any significant change in the tide table?
Yes. It's disappeared.
No, I'm wrong. I was sitting on it.
Well, yes, we have noticed something. Tides are running a bit high for this time of the year. Switzerland is now an island. The salmon are spawning in the main streets of Omaha. And we've opened up a new branch office in Atlantis. Other than that, nothing of significance.
Hold on, that
nonsense.
I'm sure that can all be explained scientifically.
Marsh gas.
Rod, it'll never get off the ground.
Painless surgery.
Hopping over wire, humbug.
Dr. Zygot of the Royal Balinese Gynecological Society and Marching Band. Have you any information pertaining to the subject at hand?
Odd you should mention it.
Odd you should say so.
As you all know, the moon governs the monthly cycle of egg production in the female. I have a working model over here.
What a tomato!
No, sir, it's an egg.
Yeah, you're an egg man!
And you, sir, are a walrus. Google Kachu.
So tight.
Danke schön.
Why do you live in California?
I love it. I love it. I used to live here. And I wouldn't forget this town, Jim. Oh, it's like Dresden after the firebombing. I mean, you know.
Well, you've just talked about the beauties of Garden Grove and a few other places out
there. Well, that's out. I don't. I'm not there, man. I'm in the middle of L.A. up. I'm on the side of a mountain right at Mulholland.
Whoa,
easy. Forget that.
Tell what happened the last time you were on the show.
Yeah, the last time I was on the show, I got eggs thrown against my house by some pusillanimous little pismire. And I know you're out there, you egg sucker, and I'm going to get you. You know I'm going to get you one day soon. You watching? Uh-huh.
Why do people do things like that, I wonder?
They're frustrated. They don't
it's like okay them. Not to like you. That's okay, isn't it? They don't have to throw eggs against your house. Say, hey, I don't like the way you think. That's
well,
all.
Maybe they figure my coming in on their TV set is my version of throwing eggs at them. So I really can't get all that upset about it. But it's just kind of dumb throwing eggs. I mean, if they really want to come and brace me, come face to face. So that I can, you know, pull off their nose and stuff it in their ear. Which is my way of saying...
Thank you. Right, thank you, America.
Cared enough to give you the very best. Right.
Now, if it were true that the moon had disappeared, there would be a significant decrease in the number of bunny rabbits. But I am not the man to give you the last word on bunny rabbits, and I wouldn't if I could.
Can you?
No. I must turn to my distinguished colleague, who, as the director of the Royal Australian Geophysical Bunny Rabbit Count, is not only the world's only validated expert on bunny rabbits, but is himself a bunny rabbit. Let's get the cute little fellow up here. Gentlemen, Professor Marsh Hare. Professor Hare? Oh, Hare, where are you? Where's Hare?
Where's Hare? Hare? No, not here. Where is Hare?
And we won't come back till we found Professor Hare.
He's not here.
Gentlemen, Professor Hare's disappearance can only mean one thing. The moon is gone. There's nothing more I can say. I will now turn over the podium.
He's turned over the podium.
Dr. Beeson, we have no time to lose. Get that podium off your stomach and let's be off.
Homeless, this case presents the greatest challenge of your career. What's your next step to be?
A foxtrot.
May I have this dance?
Oh, of course.
One, two, three, four. I want you to, three, four, go and find out everything you can upon the moon, two, three, four.
But homeless, the moon hath disappeared.
Then try the British Museum, two, three, five, one, four. Beeson, you mad dog, you're doing the Continental.
Oh, but what are you doing?
Let that be my little secret. We'll meet at midnight tonight on the heath where the moon was last seen. Do you understand?
No.
Good. Adieu.
Good night. Parting, I might say, is such sweet sorrow that I shall say good night till it be morrow.
By yonder blessed moon, I vow. Oh, swear not by the moon, the inconstant moon, that monthly changes in a circled orb.
What shall I swear by?
Mr. Moonlight.
You came to me one summer night. Said my girl,
and from above you sent us love, and now she is mine. I think you're fine, 'cause we love you,
Mr. Moonlight, Mr. Moonlight. You please.
And the night you don't come my way, I pray and pray more each day, 'cause we love you,
Mr. Moonlight.
We love you,
Mr. Moonlight. Mr. Moonlight, come again, please. Here I am on my knees, begging if you please.
And the night you don't come my way, 'cause we love you,
Mr. Moonlight, Mr. Moonlight.